I'm invested in the success of the business. I'm invested in the success of myself. Having Hammerstone exit, Athletic exit, Papa Bagel's exit, personally, I'm like, whatever I do next, you know, I'm going to be remembered by my last one, not the first three.
Welcome to Self-Equity, the podcast that dives into the inspiring journeys of founders, entrepreneurs, athletes, and entertainers. I'm your host, Jolene Tepedino, authorized officer and team business manager for the Zellniger, Dorfman, Carr, and Heritage Group at UBS. On today's episode of Self-Equity, I'm here with Jamie Lissette. He's a franchising expert and a former C-suite executive of high-profile brands such as Pop-Up Bagels and Athletic Brewing Company. Today, we're going to dive deep into Jamie's sterling career as an entrepreneur, founder, executive, investor, and driver of growth in everything he does. Jamie, thank you for joining me today.
Thanks for having me. I'm very delighted to be here.
Same. Super psyched to have you. So I was thinking about it, and I know the Jamie post the Hammerstone Group liquidity event, but I don't know much about you before. Tell me about your journey leading up to the sale of your business.
Okay. So going back, I mean, I had that business for 17 years. I think that's why I kind of hesitate. Like, what did I do before 2000? When I graduated from college, I actually saw this ad in the New York Times. This was back in 1996, just to give you some context of, you know, how you found a job. But it said like phone clerk on the American Stock Exchange options floor. And it was, I forget, it was something like $300 a week, barely any, even enough to probably feed yourself even then. But I ended up hooking up with a group called Rock Rim Securities, and they had market makers on the options floor. And so I learned options to a degree and became a trader with them, what was called upstairs, basically like a, you know, a desk trader handling incoming calls from places like UBS and other firms and really trading flow and ideas and news and information and things like that. That was the beginning of sort of my finance journey, I guess. From there, I jumped into pop trading when day trading became very popular, probably around 1998, 1999, something like that. And when AOL Messenger came out, we started having chats with other traders on AOL Messenger. And, you know, you could create a community on there and have multiple people on it. And so being able to share information so quickly back then was sort of, you know, revolutionary. So I ended up creating this this chat room, basically. And then I became like, you know, I was the organizer, probably the main, you know, talker, call it in there. Just, hey, I heard this, you know, S&P futures are on the low. I think it's this, you know, now we would say tariff comment, but back then it was something else, I'm sure. And at some point, it became so administratively tough that I remember the guy, I won't mention his name, but his like friend wanted in, and I'm like, sure, $75 a month, you know, and that was basically how Hammerstone Markets had started. And over 17 years, it just became institutionalized. I was able to hire people. We sort of played with what I call manual AI. What now ChatGPT can do in a second. We were trying to like provide context to information and news that came across, you know, sort of analyze a headline so it was more than just a headline. And, you know, I think when I sold it in 2018, there were a couple thousand subscribers and, you know, everything from a large, you know, bank to a hedge fund to a day trader. All the prop shops used us and things like that. So
when did you feel like, okay, I want to sell my business, you know, and in selling your business as an entrepreneur, is that a measure of success? And then also, if you could take me through, like, how do you find the right buyer? You know, do you stay on? What is that like?
I mean, so mine was unique. I think I always tell the story that it's like it was a 6-week process where someone, a former client of mine, called out of the blue and said, I want to introduce you to this company. They're looking to expand in the U.S. It was a Swedish media company. And so I took the call, obviously. I mean, you know, prior to that, I think I literally thought I would be in this business for life, you know, meaning running Hammerstone, because if you're in finance and then you step away from the trading side of it and you're sort of on the fintech media side of it, you know, going back to the other side doesn't really happen after 17 years. Like, you know, I was sort of in this position where, you know, I had done the same thing, although building the company, it was like, how do I transition out of this to something else, you know, using my skills that I built or I've learned over the years. And so when I got this call, it was like, hell yeah, you know, sold to you. Like, it was just, you know, it was like a gift from God of sorts where I said, all right, now I have this ability to potentially do something else with my career, with my life. Hammerstone had given me a great lifestyle because I could travel and work. You know, it was a very remote work type of situation prior to when we started talking about remote work. Being the sole owner and having a great team and things like that allowed me to, you know, go to the gym in the middle of the day, take off and live in South Africa for a month or something, and do all these crazy things. So when it happened, I looked at it, and believe me, during that 6 weeks, they were probably the most stressful at that point of my life professionally, because you didn't, you know, there's so much due diligence was crammed in. You had to get lawyers and bankers and all this other stuff. And, you know, in the end, you're like, what if they just walk away? And then you're saying, well, I make this much money a year from the business. What does a sale look like? But when I analyzed in my head and said, I will have the ability to do something else, that's where I just sort of said, okay, I got to take this as a gift and move on. And, you know, it was tough. It's such a long time doing it. Not like you built something in a year and then you sold it and you're like, okay, I can do anything I want. It was much more a like, wow, I'm really giving up a lifestyle, community of friends, clients, you know, all this type of stuff. So,
and part of your identity, right? I mean, that's who Jamie Lissette was up until that point. It was the Hammerstone.
Very, very true. Very true. So going and doing something else and you know, working for somebody else was an interesting, you know, new step type thing after, you know, just being so independent for so long. Definitely glad I sold it. The business is still out there and still working and still profitable and still flourishing. And the team that I left there actually during COVID was able to buy back the business from the team that bought it for me. And so they now own it themselves, which is great for them. You know, they have this sort of like, you know, now I guess it's a 25-year-old business that they own and that still, you know, is still relevant and has the ability to scale and things. So
amazing. What a great story. I mean, yeah. All of it. Which brings me to your shift, your pivot. I would say you are an expert in driving growth while preserving a brand's identity. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the brands that you've helped grow and kind of what your process is there?
Yeah. So when I sold Hammerstone, I literally had, you know, I had an open book and was trying to figure out like, what do I do next? And in my head, it was like, okay, I could probably fit in at like a Bloomberg at that point, but I wanted to do something very different. So kind of like life sometimes opens up these doors for you. And so I started just looking at places where potentially I could invest some money. I got super lucky and ended up meeting Bill Schufelt from Athletic Brewing, kind of reached out to him. They were 8 or 9 people in Stratford, Connecticut, which was about 20 minutes from my house. It was like, you know, pretty nice fit if I could figure something out. But I ended up going and joining them as an investor and an employee. And I kind of like put it and said, hey, I'd love to put money in, but I'd also really love a job because I need to start bridging my career into something new. I'll start from scratch essentially. But I need to do something that's different and new and interesting. So ended up joining them. Then within, I think, 3 months, I became the chief operating officer and handled, you know, everything operations related, but then also sort of sat in the room with the co-founders and helped with almost everything at the, you know, especially at the very beginning because it was a small team. The important lesson I learned there is like really find really good people doing super interesting things and then invest your time. And if you have the money, invest your money with them and help them grow. And, you know, nothing inspires you to work harder at what you're working on if you have your, you know, life savings in it, so to speak. So that was my I learned so much at Athletic because in the 4.5 years that we were there, we went from 8 or 9 people, whatever it was when I joined, to almost 250. We built multiple facilities. We did 4 financing rounds that built 2 plants or breweries and signed hundreds of distributor agreements and you know, took the revenues up 20-fold or something to really be the number one non-alcoholic beer in the country and things like that. So I learned there, nothing beats hard work and really bringing a product to market quickly, making fast decisions, not getting mired down in the muck type thing, and really just blowing up a brand the best that you can. But again, I guess I should have mentioned, if you don't have quality products, and the good people, then, you know, just run from the opportunity because it's not one. I'll take that same analogy into Papa Bagels, which was the next place that I went. I went in as an investor as well. And over a year was CFO, interim CEO and president, maybe a year and a quarter, and did, was a board member prior to that as well. But again, just like Athletic Brewing, super great quality product, very viral product in terms of marketing and things like that. But the base product itself is fantastic. The butters and schmears are fantastic. A great team, you know, all the same sort of attributes that made this one 10, you know, maybe 10x revenue by the time, I was on my way out of there. And that was, you know, again, also another working with investors from the private equity side and things like that, optimizing the business the best that you can, as fast as you can, to seize the opportunity that's out there. You know, you want to be the number one, non-elk beer, and you want to be the number one bagel chain in the country. You have the best product, you have the great people, and you have the good financial backing, and sort of it all comes together. So.
Totally. I mean, talk about sweat equity, right? Here you are thinking, still thinking like an owner, right? You're like, yeah, I'll go to another company. I'll, you know, share what I know. I'll help them grow. But I want some ownership, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it's a, you know, for anybody, you know, that's working in this environment of sweat equity, call it, right? You need to make sure that you get equity, right? You need to, I think I've talked to a lot of people over the years and you know, they sort of say the same thing, which is, I was never offered equity, or I would, of course, but you know, if you're not asking for it, you're not going to get it. And there's not all companies and all opportunities that can afford to do it. But if you're finding something at the very nascent level, you know, you should be a part of that growth and the team. If you are blessed to have some finances behind you, then even better, that where you can sort of double layer your rewards if and when it works out. You have to take risk to get a big reward, right? And I think that, you know, there's 2 ways to grow companies, and there's 2 ways probably to think about your own, you know, your own capital and improvement in your own financial senses. As you know, you do have to be fairly concentrated. You do have to take some decent, if not, you know, more than moderate risk to achieve some level of financial performance, I think. So
totally, because you're not only putting your work into it, you're putting your own money into it, right? And you're you know, taking time to be with another company where all a risk. Who knows how it's going to work out, right? So that brings me to a question I like to ask everyone on the podcast. What does sweat equity mean to you, Jamie?
Sweat equity is, you know, like at Athletic, like I put in money, that's my equity, right? And then I said, you know, rather than some sort of market salary, I'd rather have a reduced salary and get more equity, right? That's one way to think about sweat equity, right? Is I'm, you know, not working for free, but, you know, I'm working for a very low amount of actual dollars. And so I'm getting the equity in return for my sweating, right? Like, you know,
exactly.
I went from owning and running Hammerstone to driving a forklift like a week later and loving every minute of it. But, you know, saying, hey, this better work out because I'm driving a forklift, you know, and I'm 45 years old or whatever I was at the time, you know, you know, after, you know, running and owning a company and things like that. So that's sweat equity. And if you're not I think if you're not prepared to do that, you know, then you have to just think twice and say, I can either go this route that's going to include sweat equity and probably a decent amount of risk of my own capital and things like that. Or I can go, you know, a very staid sort of, you know, quote unquote corporate lifestyle, and try to work, you know, over 35 years and save money in my 401k and things like that. You know, there's nobody that says one is better than the other, because there's a certain amount of luck and there's a certain amount of, you know, you just have to have the chutzpah or whatever it is to make sure that you make those right financial risks as well, with the right people and the right concept and the right company, or know how to cut yourself out and be like, hey, you know, bad people, bad products, I made a mistake here. You know, what can I be, you know, looking for in the meantime? So
totally. Let's go through, let's say, day one, right? So you start with Athletic Brewing or pop up. What's the first thing that you do when you enter a business venture like this? You know, are you looking at the team? Are you looking at balance sheets? How are you kind of learning about where the cracks are, what you need to help, you know, how you can now begin to drive the growth of that company?
Number one always seems to be is figure out the people. You know, it is make, you know, sort of an internal assessment for yourself of, I've got, you know, 90% are A+ players. Yeah, that's great. But if you sort of do this assessment and think that you're potentially not, you know, you've got problems here, I've got problems here, I've got problems here. You got to solve the people thing first. And then, you know, going back to what I said before about product is the product as good as it can be? Is it really good? If it's just, you know, another widget, then, you know, then you're just, you're solving for different issues at that point, which is probably just efficiency and things like that. But, you know, is the product as good as it can be? Is, you know, everything geared to the customer? Because the customer is going to make you succeed or, you know, or not. And so it's, you know, really this, coming in and doing an assessment, you know, walking the floor is a, you know, way to think about it, you know, hearing from the team, what's working, what's not working, what should we change, like all those types of things, especially if it's an existing business, you know, you walk in and you sort of, you know, talk to everybody, take a step back, say, okay, now I've got to solve things. I, you know, I can't come in like a wrecking ball and I can't come in like an icebreaker. So I need to come up with a really strategic sort of medium-term plan to fixing things without making the existing team feel like they weren't part of that decision. So you need to go to them. You need to, you know, make them a part of this, call it a fix, you know. I mean, I've been with two growth companies after long... So there's two ways to build businesses, right? One is, you know, raise a lot of money, go really, really fast and get all your metrics and be a growth company and hopefully get acquired. You know, the other one is to build a very long-term, you know, profitable business, which is what I originally did. And then it was going into two growth businesses, right? And sort of having exits on both of those for me personally. You know, those are just two different ways of thinking about it. But when you walk in and which are you, you know, because you're either growth or you're sort of this long-term profitable one. And really assessing, you know, where are all stakeholders aligned for what, right? What's the exit? What's the plan? Do we want to sell it in a year? Do we want to sell it in 5 years? Are we a long-term forever holder and things like that? And just really working through all different stakeholders to figure out, make sure that you're all aligned.
Right. And make sure you don't miss it, right? It could be like, oh, there it was. There was the time to sell, or there was the time to get in. I mean, like you said, it's a lot of risk. It's a lot of intuition. And you certainly learn a lot about the company from walking the floors and talking to the people, talking to the team.
Those are the three biggest things. And, you know, I think I've seen the scenarios where, and I'm not talking about the potential companies I've worked at, but I've seen having been an investor in many other companies at this point too, where, you know, you can see usually within a year or so of investing in a company if you feel it's going to work out. When I am involved in a business and, you know, especially intimately and working and you know, not just from an investment standpoint, That's all I think about, you know, 24 hours a day in terms of, you know, getting up and thinking about, oh, I got to, you know, that would be a good idea. And like writing a note down and, you know, you're in the shower, it's all cliche, but you're certainly, you know, I think when someone is, you know, so invested, whether it's money or just time and effort and things like that, you know, I'm invested in the success of the business. I'm invested in the success of myself, right? Like I, you know, having Hammerstone exit, Athletic exit, Papa Bagel's exit, you know, personally, like I'm like, whatever I do next, you know, I'm going to be remembered by my last one, not the first three. So,
exactly.
You know, so if and when, you know, when I do whatever I'm going to do next, you know, it's super, super important for me to, you know, to really maximize every aspect of it, you know, to earn my sweat equity, to earn my equity, or to, you know, to earn a return on my equity, and all of that, and really push as hard as I can push. And, you know, sometimes that's not, you know, this lovey-dovey, you know, sort of interactions, but it's certainly done with respect and you know, cordial behavior in corporate culture.
Yeah. And Jamie, that's what makes you who you are. That's what makes you so amazing at what you do. You're always thinking, you dive right in. It's like in your blood. Do you think you can teach? I mean, you can teach it to a degree, but it has to come from within a person. Good follow-up, good communication, creativity, you know, having a thought, getting it executed. If it's not you personally, then find someone else to execute it, which brings me to education. I know education is very important to you. You recently completed a intensive French course in Paris. What was the thought process behind that? You know, you're a successful man, you've got a beautiful family, you work hard. You know, how did you come up with that idea? And you know, how does it help you in your, you know, day-to-day life running businesses and such?
I think it certainly comes to this concept that, you know, it's cliched as well, but it's like constant learning. Like I'm taking an AI course through Columbia University or something that starts in July, you know, because I think, you know, how important AI is to it. I think one thing is, as you get older, I'm 53, you know, if you're not adding sort of things to your repertoire or to your playbook and things like that, then you're just, you know, it's like, if you don't work out five times a week, your muscles as you get older are going to get weaker. Like it's just nature. So I think as you get older and, you know, quote unquote, more accomplished or not, and things like that, you have to be adding relevance to yourself, and education is the easiest way. And it's the best way. When I sold Hammerstone, I went to this program at Wharton for 6 weeks. It was called the Advanced Management Program. Selfishly, I did it to learn some more business-oriented stuff. I was trying to, like, how am I going to reinvent myself, right? We talked about earlier, and having my last relevant education being a political science degree from, you know, 1993 didn't feel that relevant for your LinkedIn and public profile, right? We live in a world where I guarantee you the first recruiter that hears my name or something goes to my LinkedIn and looks at what I've done. And if it just said 30 years ago, you know, graduated from political science, which is the only reason I took it, was there was no math and foreign language requirement. You know, that was like, I was like, woo, easy way out. But adding these things into your repertoire, you know, whether it was, I did like an MIT AI course, I'm doing this one with Columbia, going and learning French for 5 weeks, you know, was fantastic. Like anybody who travels a lot, whenever you're away, it feels like forever. And then when you come back, it's like, that wasn't that long, you know, like, and you right back into your normal day or life, you know, style back home, you know, it within 3 days, you almost forgotten that you were away. And now you're back into the same old thing. And so you always just have to, in my opinion, be trying new things and learning new things and, you know, signing up for seminars or whatever it is, or speaking, you know, someplace. And, you know, my wife often says, she's like, I've never seen somebody take so many like lunches and coffees and things like that. But, you know, I had lunch yesterday with a business owner who owns a bunch of seafood shops, you know, and talking with a guy who's got 50 you know, quick service restaurants out of Philly that has an interesting business. And because I've learned through Papa Bagels how interesting this, you know, the businesses that can be franchised are. You know, I'm just always looking for an opportunity, you know, whether it's to invest, it's an opportunity to know more about a certain aspect of business, to be more educated on it, because then when I speak to someone else about something, you know, I got contextual relevance in my head of, you know, I spoke to this guy at this place or this woman and she said this. And, you know, I thought that was really helpful for your business. You know, having this ability to be helpful to other people is something that everybody should, you know, keep in their wheelhouse of, you know, not just for me, how could I help you? You know, I'm not talking about just ideas, but sort of, hey, you know, I thought you might like to meet this person because if I remember you were looking for somebody to help you with XYZ, you know, I vetted this person. They're really great. You know, I think you guys would hit it off. I'll let you take it from here type thing. That stuff goes a long way when you hit the right connection. It's how I found Athletic Brewing. I went to look at another beverage company that was raising money. And kind of went through the meeting. It was somebody actually who used to work for me at Hammerstone that was working at the company. And I went through the meeting. I'm like, guys, I don't think it's for me. I really appreciate the time and this and that. Like, if you know what I'm kind of looking for. If you hear of anything, let me know. On the way out, the guy says, have you heard of Athletic Brewing? I'm like, no, you know, you know, I go home and I look it up and then, you know, I take that information from their website and I go, this is really interesting. I've always thought that there should be like a great tasting non-alcoholic beer because people are into moderation, I think, a lot of times versus abstinence, and having, you know, something that could go in between other drinks was always in my head the killer application, let's say, for non-alcoholic beer was this like choice of, you know, hey, I'm going to have a really heavy IPA and then I'm going to have an Athletic Brewing or a non-alcoholic beer. And then I can have a, you know, a Corona or something like that. And I can moderate my evening or my day or whatever it is. But I took that meeting. They suggested Athletic Brewing. I called a friend of mine who was a private equity guy. And I said, have you ever looked into non-alcoholic beer? You know, because actually I used some research from UBS from the website on and just search non-alcoholic beer. And in Europe, it was like 5-15% of the market. And in the US, it was less than half of 1%. And I was like, wait, there's an arb here of information or taste or something. But the private equity guy said, and this is how so many things happen, literally writes me back within 5 minutes and says, I just met Bill Schufelt. Would you like an intro? And it was like, okay, you know, thanks. And then, yeah, I did too, actually, because that's literally how it happened. But, you know, you know, from that gave me this new career, right? It was a lot of work, but it gave me this new career in consumer goods and things like that after, you know, not pigeonholing, but really being in a very, very niche market of fintech media, right? To non-alc beer, to bagels and franchising and restaurants and things like that. You know, so, you know, for me, it's kind of an interesting, like, you know, jump around. And it's, I think actually, honestly, I could do anything. Like, you know, I could get into widgets and, you know, try to build the best widget company, or, you know, back into banking and finance and tech and things like that. But I'm going to be for opportunities that way, making actually a bunch of investments right now, in some private companies, that it may or may not help in any format other than some money. But I think it's a good time to invest through the noise of whatever's going on in the public company or public market and put some money to work. You know, I was blessed to have done a large portion of my investments in my IRA and a Roth IRA. And so my goal is to just reinvest the Roth IRA in things that, you know, can, you know, quintuple or 20-couple or whatever you want to call it. And right. Hopefully it's a lot more than when I started and tax-free. So
amazing. Jamie, I'm just thinking, you know, back, tell me about, were there any mentors, managers, you know, people that sort of took a shot on you, you know, a chance, you know, gave you an opportunity that, you know, you look back and you still kind of refer to that?
Yeah, I mean, I've been a fantastically supportive wife, Hannah, so that always helps. Right? It's like, okay, you wanna get into that old beer? Okay, like, I trust you. You know, I believe in you type of thing. So that's always been, we've been married for 20 something years. So it's definitely been a part of all of these journeys that we spoke about. Separately is, you know, I'm blessed to have an identical twin brother that, you know, was part of the thought process in the back of my head, I think, of when I was leaving the finance and Finn. I was like, wow, he's done really well in, you know, in consumer goods. You know, maybe I should be in consumer goods as my next move. You know, him and I probably compete against each other, which is healthy competition, but always supporting each other type thing. Him and I can sort of go back and forth. We've invested in companies together. You know, he's been on the board of companies and things like that, where I'll be doing the sweat equity. He's on the board of some equity, and this package between the two of us and with his great success as well, you know, seems to resonate as like a nice little partnership type deal for some of the companies that we've been involved in. But he'd be that person, I think. You know, we're both really pragmatic, I think, in terms of business and things like that. So, you know, there's a lot of fluff in communication and things like that. And I think there's a real skill to, you know, getting underneath that and figuring out just like, you know, there's complicated questions and usually there's simple answers type thing. Right. And it's like, okay, well, you know, this is seemingly very complicated, but I think the real thing that we're really discussing is this simple concept here. Let's solve for that together. And then that complicity goes away. Right. Like, so him and I think share this sort of like ability, and we don't always agree. We'll have different varying degrees of, you know, optimism or the opposite on things. And so it's really a good balancing act, because we do usually come to the same place, but he brings insights on financial modeling and things like that, that I really don't, have as great of, you know, was at a corporation for 30 years, and that became a public company at some point. And so, you know, his grasp of that stuff is a little bit better, whereas I'm more strategic finance. He can actually, you know, do modeling and things like that I'm not great at. But so we have different skill sets, I think, that really come together. So, and when we do work together on things.
Who's older?
I am by 2 minutes.
2 minutes. Wow. That's wild. Do you guys have any of those like identical twin things? Like you'll show up wearing the same outfit or you'll kind of.
Honestly, all the time. Which, you know, like I said, we're 53, you know, I'll go visit them. And then it's like, hey, we're all getting ready for dinner. Meet at 6:45 downstairs type thing. And we really walk in wearing the exact same thing. And it's like, really? But it happens more often than not. So, and I say that with a very straight face. Yeah. It's really surprising. And even, you know, showing up like, you know, hey, we're going to meet somewhere in the Caribbean or something. And, you know, literally show up at the airport together and wearing the same thing. It's like, oh my God.
Do you send him back to his room to change because he's the baby brother? Where do you roll with it?
Well, we usually roll with it because it usually is like the beginning of a fun night. And right. You know, we'll just roll with it. And then
we've got
lots of... different things that we say at like restaurants and things that, because inevitably somebody says, are you guys, you know, related? And yeah. we like to say no, and then we have a bunch of like, you know, funny things of how we may have known each other from, you know, from being very young and things like that.
I'm sure you have a lot of fun with that, and you've had a lot of fun with that all through the year.
Absolutely.
Well, Jamie, thank you so much for being with us today. Really appreciate your time. This was so amazing. I'm glad I got to learn more about you. I'm sure there's even more to get to, but really appreciate you and your support.
Awesome. I really appreciate talking to you, and I hope you have a great success.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review Client Relationship Summary, provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.